Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoge, your host. Thank you for tuning in today. We are live today. You're on the Arts Magazine Show as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. Stay dry over the weekend. You're down in Westport when things were flooding just a little bit. I've heard several stories about that just this morning within the last few hours. But everyone survived. Of course, rain is in the forecast once again. So stay high, stay dry, and stay listened to KKFI, okay? On the show today, we're going to cover shows going on. We have a show that's going to open September 8th. And run through the 24th. It's a production of our friends down at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater. Oh, just about 3.5 blocks north of where we are right now. And with us to tell us all about Picasso at the Lapin Agile, a play by comedian Steve Martin. I should say he would want me to say musician Steve Martin, because as he said recently in an interview, he was concentrating more on the music in this period of his life. But he did write this play, Picasso at the Lapin Agile, a real place in Paris. Ironically enough, and here to tell us all about it, Andy Penn is with us. He plays the role of Pablo Picasso. Stepping into the shoes of a famous artist. Are you artistically inclined in your own personal life?
I was in junior high school, but I haven't pursued it much other than the craft of acting, yes.
Yeah. Well, Picasso had opinions. They were expressed through his art, but also verbally as well. He had many fine quotes during his career as well, and we'll talk about some of that. Jake Walker plays the role of Albert Einstein. A lot of responsibility there.
Playing
the premier genius of the past century.
Right. Well, Steve Martin's kind of given us a gift where I don't know that I would want people to consider this Einstein an accurate description of the actual Einstein. I'm playing Steve Martin's winking, very silly version of Albert Einstein.
So these guys had fun with each other? Maybe?
They do in our play, for sure. Yeah, there's kind of a competition between Picasso and Einstein of whose creative process is more valid, and does an artist have, the same kind of weight as a scientist and vice versa, and it all comes together in a weird, wacky, magical way.
Not long ago, Jake was at the New Theater Restaurant. He did the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival. Andy, by the way, has played at the Met, played at the Fringe, I guess, most recently. Mm-hmm. And their colleague, Laura Hendricks, is with us as well. She most recently was in a project at the Fringe. Mm-hmm. What project was that?
That was Luciano for me.
Oh, so you're going all classical in the things you do.
Luciano for me is not classical. Very, very comedic, new age sort of.
And also
musical.
Played at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater mm-hmm. before as well, and a host of other things, not necessarily around Kansas City. From where do you hail?
Oh, I mean, just more out community theater, sort of like you know, other places.
So non-professional theater. Okay. Well, they're in Picasso at the Lapin Agile. Back, it's Picasso and Einstein at the Lapin Agile. And from my understanding, a real bar, Parisian bar in Paris, where the artistic community, even in this day, and we're thinking of 1904, perhaps, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where they would have gathered and talked about things and had discussions, but there's no evidence, I guess, that they actually did meet. But it could have happened, you say?
It could have, yes. They were, both knocking around Europe at the same time. Yep. And
so in theory, it is certainly possible.
And, of course, this was way before television, and there wasn't all that much film in those days. So would they even have recognized each other in a bar?
No, I don't think so. Not Einstein. I don't think Einstein had gained world fame as much as he did later in life.
Yeah, the theories wouldn't have come yet.
No, in the play, he's on the verge of releasing or presenting his unified field theory.
Yeah.
That's where we find
it. And tell the folks what that one is.
That is the unified field theory. It's very complicated. So you have a field. And it's very shaken and separate. And you unify it, Bada bing, bada boom. Bada science.
So E equals MC squared.
Exactly. That's right between the lines.
Energy times the speed of light squared. Something like that.
Something like that, yeah. Well, that's the gift of doing, you know, if I was doing, you know, when Jared Leto eventually plays Einstein, I'm sure that he'll, you know, go through all of his research. This play is a joke. I mean, it's not a joke, but it's like, you know, when a spider has babies and all of its little tiny babies are on its back? That's what this play is, but with jokes. So the whole play is a kind of silly, magical suggestion, and within it are these little bits, these kind of Steve Martin, strange vaudeville little comic bits. So the pressure to come in and be an expert on the science or Einstein's history is Steve Martin gives us permission to forget that and not be enslaved to on playing Einstein. More of just, I got to make these people laugh.
Before this play takes place, in the fantasy of this world, had they met before? This was the very first meeting?
That's the suggestion is yes, that this is the very first meeting between these two.
Give us a brief sketch. How did this come about? Who was there first? Who ran into who? How was this connection made?
Well, Einstein was arrived at the bar first on this particular night and found that the topic of conversation almost exclusively was Picasso.
Ah.
During his wait there, he's waiting for a woman, and as the conversation revolves around this Picasso, this artist of some renown, finally Picasso arrives. And the two of them meet under those circumstances.
So Picasso is in his blue period.
Correct.
Maybe we should explain. He had different periods he went through as an artist. This was his blue period.
Correct. This is 3 years before he transitioned into his next period that followed the blues. So, and there are references, comic references, to his being in the blue period at this point in time. And even Picasso himself says, you know, if I asked myself what color I wanted, it would just slow me down.
Oh.
And so in reference to why did he, as an artist, go through these monochromatic periods, we don't necessarily know the answer to that, but Steve Martin has a commentary on it.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. So the conversation was about Picasso, so Einstein felt like he had to get involved in this.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the Einstein in Steve Martin's play is very curious about the world and people and other people's passions. So we meet several people that come in, and Einstein will question them and try to explore the way the other person is thinking. And that's kind of what happens with Picasso. It's Einstein and Picasso, I think they immediately feel a sort of connection to each other in that, okay, so we think in a different kind of way than most people walking around the Champs-Élysées. we're not the average Joes, and maybe there's something, even though you paint and, you know, I do formulas and theories, maybe there's some kind of connection we have in how our brains work, and they discover that that's pretty true.
Well, involved in the process of creation, approached from different ways, but one of you told me earlier, surprisingly, a lot alike as well.
Very much so. And it's Einstein's curiosity that opens Picasso's eyes. Picasso enters the play, and it's all about Picasso in his own eyes. He's a very egocentric character and wouldn't even consider the notion that the creative process for science would be anything close to what his own process is, and would probably consider it invalid for that reason, because it's so very different from what he understands creation to be. But Einstein posits some very interesting questions and observations, and Picasso then is forced to reevaluate his assessment of the value and the validity of science and its creative process, mm-hmm. because they are very much the same.
Picasso in this period, I guess, was much more famous, if it's even fair to give degrees of fame. But at this point, I would think you would be on the topic of everyone's conversation if you were in a place.
Yes.
That is Picasso. That is the Picasso over there.
Picasso, very well known at this point. Still young, struggling to be hugely successful, but his work was widely known and respected at this point in time.
Yeah, Einstein, not quite so much.
Albert still got the day job. He's still at the patent office at this point.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But all these theories are going around in his mind, even then, I think.
Yes, yeah. That's where we find him.
Yeah. Now, Laura plays the love interest for not just these two, but a third as well.
Right. There's another quote-unquote genius that enters the bar who I play a love interest
for. There's enough room in there for three geniuses.
Well, at one point in the play, all three of them are on stage. So.
I know it's a real place. I don't know how big it is. Or was it considered, forgive me, but a dive? What kind of a place was this?
Well, it was... It was known as a place where struggling artists would hang out. It's indicated in the script that it's a place where manifestos were written or arrived at, so people would discuss weighty things and come up with ideas. But also, in the little research I've done about the location, it was also a place where pimps and prostitutes and a lot of unseemly individuals would also...
With all respect to Laura, with the love interest of all three.
That's
of the
all right. Picasso's love interest, one of his love interests, is
the character that's involved with Picasso first. How does she find him to be?
Well,
does she consider him arrogant?
Well, I mean, she's actually quite in love with him before she sees him at the bar. She's waiting for him because she hasn't seen him in 2 weeks, and so she's, you know, really, really just wanting to see someone who she really thinks she's in love with again. And then he sort of doesn't recognize her at first, and so she gets very upset. And I think, yes, well, he is just all about himself, very arrogant. So yeah. I think she's just slowly realizing bits and pieces from the encounter 2 weeks ago. Oh, yeah, all this points to him being very arrogant about himself, and this just seals it. But, yeah, it's all about him.
Yeah, but about your character that is in love with Dr. Einstein.
With Einstein, she is a countess. And she is just someone there who enjoys listening to Einstein's rattling of scientific theories.
Well, and she's a powerful mind in her own right.
Well, yes. I mean, but...
what's the line? You know, when she enters, exchange of kind of sexy talk, but it's...
What was that you were saying about it being impossible to distinguish motion produced by an outside gravitational force?
Yeah, so that's her come on.
That's the
sounds
the
very
love
sexy
talk.
To
oh,
that.
Oh, yes,
line.
That's the sexy talk.
Oh, boy, she's doing it.
Yeah. Sounds like there might be some innuendo in there as well.
There could be, possibly.
Steve Martin wouldn't be Steve Martin
oh,
if you didn't
no.
have some of that in there.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, what do you think? During the period that Steve Martin wrote this, who might he have had in mind? Perhaps Bernadette Peters? Have you given that a thought?
Well, and I actually hadn't thought of it until you just brought it up, because I looked at the original cast, and I looked at the woman who originally played Suzanne Countess and the other woman, and I didn't recognize her, so I don't know if he just couldn't get someone, or if he wanted someone more just unknown.
Perhaps he wanted someone that would fit all
of them. Fit all three and wouldn't just be, yeah, because she has to mold into three completely different people. So if you get Bernadette Peters, it's going to be, oh, this is Bernadette Peters in a blonde wig, and now she's in a red wig, and now she's in a brunette wig.
That's true. The audience might tend to think that. Yeah.
So I feel like it would be a bit more difficult for them to just accept that she's a completely different character.
Yeah. Now, the third gentleman, we'll talk about him. He's not here, and he's not featured largely in the play.
Right. His name is Schmendemann. The inventor of Schmendemite, a very inflexible building material. I don't actually get to be with Schmendemann I'm looking for him at that point. He's not there.
But he often hangs out there.
He might. I heard that he goes to the Pont au Gy, but he just does not happen to be there when I am there looking for him.
But you guys are, I guess, regulars who have never met before.
Picasso is a regular. This is Einstein's. It's alluded that this is his first appearance at the Pont au Gy.
Now, the subject matter could get very weighty, but I'll bet there's a lot of light affair as well.
Oh, yeah.
I would say it's mostly light.
Mostly light.
I mean, I first saw this play when I was in college down at, now it's called Missouri State University, and it was Southwestern Missouri State, SMSU. And, you know, what strikes me about it is that it all the things that you love about Steve Martin from The Jerk, all of that's there. But there's also another level of incredibly intelligent conversation that's happening about art and science and the universe and destiny and what the kind of point of art and science and their relationship to each other. So it's, you know, in the context of a metaphorical knock-knock joke, you have some really beautiful phrasings of philosophical and artistic questions. It's, to me, intoxicating to laugh my head off in one moment and then kind of be struck by a, you know, almost like one of those Buddhist bowls, singing bowls, where you hear that tone and you're like, whoa, that stops you and you think and it hits you in your chest. And this play has a couple moments that have potential to do that.
Yeah, Steve Martin, kind of different types of a personality all in one. I interviewed one of the directors, directed him in the movie where he played the dentist. I can't think of the title right
now. A Little Shop of Horrors.
It wasn't that one. It was when he played a modern
Novocaine.
That's the one. And he said Steve could be very serious.
Yeah.
Steve could be very humorous. And it's still Steve. So he put give Steve a banjo, and there was a different Steve on all that. So does he try to blend that out of the characters of Einstein, Picasso? Do we see other sides of them than the public would realize?
I think we do, yes. And that's part of the broad strokes that Jake was referring to. That these characters that we're playing are not the real people, based on. But, of course, then they've been Martinized. So... and that really is a gift for us, because we can take pieces of what we know about who they were, but we don't have to do much more research than what Steve Martin has already provided for us in terms of what these characters believed. And those profound moments, I think the fact that they are beautifully wrapped in some ridiculousness and some insanity makes them somewhat easier to digest, perhaps. It really is a wonderfully crafted script. It's a lot of fun to work on.
See, I could see this as a series of plays. Or maybe next time two other geniuses met.
Oh, yeah.
And then maybe match up Einstein with someone else.
Yeah, Louisa May Alcott. Yeah.
So that would be interesting. But the parallels of what they could say to each other, what they would say to each other, what they would talk about, the conclusions they would come to. Was there much agreement between Einstein and Picasso? There's a lot of mathematics involved in art.
Indeed, yeah. And I think they come to a profound respect for one another within the script. Once Einstein, in his curiosity, begins to frame some questions that force Picasso to look at the world a little differently than he had done before, and realizes a kinship with this scientist that he probably never would have imagined possible.
Sure. Does the script give us any indication of what they chose to drink?
Yes.
Just curious.
They do, yeah.
It does.
Well, I
what does Einstein drink?
I order absinthe. They give me vodka.
Which is part of a great little joke.
Yeah.
And I don't... The only drink that Picasso orders is a rosé wine.
Rosé.
Rosé.
it for a very specific reason at that point in the play. It makes perfect sense. But I did speak with the actor who's playing Freddy the bartender. Picasso's drink of choice was absinthe.
Oh, okay.
When I find it interesting knowing that that's what he orders when he comes into the bar.
Oh, that's interesting.
Whole another level.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff that's folded in there. And, you know, maybe we're drawing conclusions, but I think that's a neat little piece that he orders it, and that's what I end up drinking. So during the play, whenever I go up to the bar and Freddie just hands me another drink, it's going to be absinthe.
Well, let's talk about some of those other characters in the play. Freddie the bartender, mm-hmm. Integral role, probably, in that he serves everyone in the bar. Who plays that role? Do we know?
Brian Moses.
Brian Moses. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other characters? Well, how big is the cast? I should go that way, I suppose. How many are you of there? Of you are there?
Brian Moses, Devin Barnes.
Who is Jermaine.
Right. Kevin Fuel.
Uh-huh. Who is Gaston.
Hollis.
Who is Schmendeman.
And Chris, who is...
Who plays a visitor?
A secret.
Oh, Sego.
Okay.
And Bill.
Bill.
Bill Pelletier, who plays
Sego.
And they all have
an art dealer.
And they all have interactions with you on an intellectual level.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What other topics come up? These other people. This you could. We're not asking them to give away anything. I wouldn't do that. But.
No, well, it's very much like you would imagine Steve Martin's where his mind goes. You know, so there's times where we're talking about what makes a painting good.
Uh-huh.
There's times where we are talking about. What Einstein's theory of relativity means, and it's like really hard for him to explain. Mm-hmm. He's like, well, it's about everything. And mm-hmm. someone, you know, Devin, who plays Jermaine, is like, well, is it about, do you mean everything, like everything from birth to death? It's bigger than that, you know. So we talk about relationships between men and women.
We talk about pi.
Talk about pi.
Pi are square.
No, don't get quite that far. Just about regular pi, but
pie you would eat.
Yes, the sort of pie you would eat.
Well, so this pi are round.
There's much discussion about the shape of the pi as well.
Which is wonderful.
Is there a deep intellectual meaning in that, do you think? Did Martin mean something, or was that just an accident?
With the whole pi?
Yeah.
The pi moment comes from a joke. So
that Freddie finds
yeah, the
funny.
Bartender says tells a joke about a guy who orders a lowercase e pie, and then goes through a lot of trouble ordering it, and then eats it at the bakery. And so it's like, well, why did you need a lowercase e shit to buy it? And that's the joke.
I just had a feeling there was some deep level joke there by Martin. Pie and mathematics and pies.
Well, I was going to say, I love that it's pi r squared, but then it's also lowercase e like e equals mc squared. So yeah. It's all going back to you.
Yeah,
for all
sure.
Of that.
There are connections for sure.
The show opens September 8th and runs through the 24th at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, our neighbors down the street at 3614 Main. The number to call for more information is 816-569-3226, and their website is metkc.org. We're speaking with three of the actors in the show, Andy Penn, who plays the role of Pablo Picasso, Jake Walker, who is Albert Einstein, and Laura Hendricks, who is the love interest for three of the gentlemen in the show, all involved, all geniuses. What is the special difficulty in dealing with a genius? I wouldn't know, of course, but
well,
what about you?
I mean, really, for at least Suzanne, who is Picasso's love interest, she's the only one who really has trouble, because Countess with Einstein, they're already both taken with each other in love and, you know, already are on the same mind level. And then the other woman never really meets Schmendemann, so they never really get to interact. So a lot of the conflict comes just between... Suzanne's longing for Picasso, and then Picasso not giving her the time of day, and then trying to give her the time of day when he remembers who she is.
He was quite the ladies' man, correct?
Quite the ladies' man, yes. We learned a lot about that.
A notorious lover.
Yes, we get to learn all about fun things.
Yeah, Picasso, in his interaction with Suzanne, gets in his own way in that particular relationship. His own self-absorption becomes an obstacle for any continuance there, which They work through it, but you only come see it.
Okay, so you have to come see how it works out. It's very, very lovely how it does.
Yeah, well, it's a what-have-been play. What if Pablo Picasso and Albert Einstein had met, sat down, had a freestanding talk at an actual place, the Lapin Agile, in Paris, France, in 1904.
Right.
And I think the period in history means just as much as the storyline, where they were at this period, as opposed to where they'll go from here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Picasso lived to be quite elderly. He lived a long, long time after that.
He did indeed.
Yeah. And to have been famous, if that's the right word to say, for so long, you know, admired, at least his work was admired, through three different periods. Einstein, I guess, was just at the beginning of his notoriety, perhaps
right.
That's a better word.
The foot of fame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just the things they would have talked about and the conclusions they would have come to. Taking a different, well, mortality, for instance. I guess in some of Einstein's theories, that goes on forever.
Yeah.
And I don't know what Picasso's belief system was.
Well, he was he became an atheist. raised as a Catholic.
So he wasn't convinced by relativity.
But there is, the play does discuss that idea of mortality and what it means to these men. And there's one of Picasso's lines which references kind of what you're talking about. He says, "This is the night that the earth fell quiet and listened to a conversation." These two men who are so important in their own fields find this brotherhood together, which is significant.
You open September 8th and you run through the 24th, basically a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You spoke of this earlier.
Mainly Thursday, Friday, Saturday evenings with two Sunday matinees, and I believe we have one Wednesday night.
And one Wednesday as well. You can get all that straight by going to their website, metkc.org. The Metropolitan Ensemble Theater is located at 3614 Main, Kansas City, Missouri. If you map quest, you need the zip code 64111, and the number to call for even more information is 816-569-3226. Another production of the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater. Karen Paisley, Bob Paisley, bringing some great shows. They get great reviews in the paper, usually.
Mm-hmm.
They really do. And this probably will be no different, I would expect.
I mean,
we hope, yeah.
Clued out for all that's going on. Thanks so much for being with us. Andy Penn, who plays the role of Pablo Picasso, Jake Walker, who plays the role of Albert Einstein, and Laura Hendricks, who plays three different women, all lovers of geniuses. I would think that would be a special challenge right there.
Yes.
I mean, how do you get them to notice you when they're really just noticing themselves?
Well, that's me.
That's the way it is. Thanks so much for being with us. We're going to take a brief break. When we return, even more to come your way. Live show this Monday. Rain's in the forecast. Be careful. We'll return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI 90.1 FM. And welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. We're going to journey south now. We were here in Midtown. We're going to journey much south down to Olathe, where the Olathe Civic Theater Association is presenting Altar Boys. I guess you've already opened. Did you have a successful first opening weekend?
Absolutely, yeah. It was a great weekend for Okta. It was a great weekend for us. We're excited to rest a couple of days and then be back at it this upcoming weekend and the weekend after.
That's right. That's the voice of Guy Gardner. He is the director. He is a director, a choreographer. This is his first time directing at Okta, but of course, he's directed many more times. I've seen his work at the Barn, other places as well.
Yep, Theater in the Park, the Barn, over in Leavenworth, wherever will take my crazy brain, I'll work there.
Also been a choreographer all around town.
Yep.
Yeah, all of that?
Oh, yeah.
You still do your work at Worlds of Fun?
No, I haven't worked for Worlds of Fun for a while, but
see, that
I still go out there all the time.
Auditioning all those people who want to be summer performers must have been difficult.
Yeah, I did mainly the acting jobs out there, but I did get to work with so many great people that are even still there performing and working hard, and I live with a few of the performers from there as well. So
okay.
I'm still up on the Worlds of Fun, just not out there every day.
Sure. Scott Salem is with us as well.
Hello.
He plays the role of Matt. Matthew. This is his first show with Okta.
Correct.
And his second show in Kansas City, which, of course, begs the question, Scott, where else in Kansas City?
Right before Altar Boys, I was in Once Upon a Mattress with the Leawood Stage Company. So that was the first show that I did here. I just moved here 2 months ago.
Where did you come from?
Salina, Kansas.
Salina, Kansas. Mm-hmm. Is this a different kind of theater community than Salina?
Well, you know, I mean, community theater has a lot of similarities across the board as far as just the interconnectedness of people. Like, everyone knows everyone, no matter where. I mean, I met people at Leawood who knew people from Salina.
Oh, really? Just,
you know, I mean, so in that sense, it kind of feels familiar. But yes, it is. Having so many different options is definitely something I'm not used to. And, just, you know, there's one community theater in Salina.
Well, 1,000 theaters
here.
The show is called Altar Boys with a Z at the end of there. And it's a, I don't know a whole lot about the show, but small town boys who,
Made it big. They're a Christian pop group that have made it big, and they're on their world tour. And the premise of the show is that it's the final concert of their national or world tour, whatever you want to say. I would say world tour. And it just so happens to be at Olathe Civic Theater Association. So each night is a play on the final night of their performance, a final night of their long-standing concert. You really can compare them to 90s boy bands and 90s Christian boy bands as well. And from an audience standpoint, you get a show that's reminiscent of boy band life, and then you also get humor, Christian humor, Jewish humor. It's written very, very well, and one of the most smartly written shows that I've ever read, and I was really excited that Okta let me put it on, because there are some jokes in here that I could never have come up with, but when you hear them land, it is hilarious. And it's for everybody, you know. It doesn't matter if you've been to church once or you go to church every Sunday, you're going to hear these jokes and you're going to laugh. Or if you're even agnostic, which we talk about in the show.
Is this a group that met at their church, for instance? I'm just speculating.
Most of us, yeah, actually. So four of us met at the church, and then we have a character named Abraham, who's the Jewish character, who just kind of comes in and just becomes part of the group, kind of out of nowhere, spontaneously.
Yeah, and in their past, they were altar boys together, so naturally, after they get the calling from G.O.D., they decide to name their band Altar Boys, and there's a song about, you know, how they got the calling from the Lord. It's very
literal.
It's a very interesting show that is not done very often and is not something you see on stage that often. It is a rock concert, first and foremost, and then behind that, it is a comedy, and then behind that, there's so much heart that you feel within these boys. So
sure.
It's got everything that you want in a musical, and it's not that long, so you're going to get to go home at a reasonable time.
Scott, you sing, obviously.
Yes.
You sung most of your performing career.
Yes. It's been pretty much all musical theater since I started doing theater. When I was 11 was when I started, so it's been a long time. But doing musicals is something that I'm passionate about. It's my major in college was musical theater, and so it was, you know, it made sense to come out and do musical theater when I moved out here.
Sure. Tell us about Matthew. How does he fit in? What kind of a person is he?
Okay,
how does he fit into the story?
So Matthew is the leader of the boy band. He's the one who's kind of keeping the group together and on track, mostly. We have some characters who like to go off track. But his role in the whole show is being that one that pushes them through when things don't go as planned, and making sure that the concert still happens the way it's supposed to, and keeping the morale of the group up when things don't go exactly as they should. And that's Matthew's character.
Yeah. Well, so tell us about some of the others in the show, how they fit in. I mean, it's in any group, I guess, there are some that are leaders in the group. It sounds like Matthew is, and there's others that are more followers.
I mean, we have the natural satire of a boy band. We've got the bad boy, who is character Luke, played
the
by Jeremy Walterman. Yeah,
yeah.
And he for sure is the bad boy. We've got the Latin lover, which is Juan, played by Delano Mendoza. We've got the choreographer, Mark, played by Gabe Lastly. And then we've got the lyricist slash black sheep of the group, which is Abraham, played by Zane Champy. So we've got everything that you anticipate in a boy band.
Right.
Was this typical, as is with some boy bands, a quick rise to the top and then a big flame out? Where are we on this process?
In this show, they definitely are at their peak.
Yes.
And because it's theater, there's naturally a conflict at some point in the show. So, I don't want to give anything too, you know, don't give too much away, but you will see some conflict within the boys throughout the show, as you do with all boy bands, and you do with all pop stars, really. There's always that shave the head crazy moment.
Oh, and they all want to go off on their own and do their own career.
You hit the nail on the head.
No
Michael.
Idea.
Is this the case with Matthew? Does he feel like a solo career would be better? Don't give anything away,
right.
Of course.
And I wouldn't want to give anything
answer
away.
Answer is if you were Matthew, which you are, Matthew.
Right. All I will say is that I want to give a big shout-out to Sony for all the gift baskets that they sent to us for the whole group.
There you go. He just did a very overdramatic wink, just so you're aware. He must have been directed by a great director. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's everything that you'd expect. There's name-dropping, just as he did. You can tell that Sony was probably involved in the writing of the show. There's those moments of audience participation. There's the moments of unexpected props. It's a campy musical that has no real camp in it. One of the things that you get when you choose to do the show are these 10 commandments that you're supposed to follow. And one of them is that you treat this very seriously. All of the boys, even though they are satirical and
stereotypes,
you don't treat them that way, and they don't act that way at all. So it makes it even funnier that these boys really do think everything's happening. The show centers around a soul censor that they bring to each concert, and they save the souls of everyone in the theater.
Oh,
and the whole point of their concert is to get the number to zero. So that's going to be where our conflict comes in, going from whatever number of people are in the house down to zero.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a point of contention for many of the boys throughout the whole thing, and finding out. And as an audience member, you want it to get down to zero. Something that was really cool was opening night,
right,
when we got to zero and the audience just started applauding. And I had never expected the audience to be that invested in that number getting to zero. But when it did, boom, we had this huge applause, and it was a really cool moment. So that was interesting and really cool, and
yeah,
made me realize that the soul censor, although a prop in essence, was its own character at the same time. If I gave the soul censor a bow, it probably would have gotten a standing ovation.
So it is interesting what you say about the audience being invested in the plot. Johnny Carson used to say, if you buy the premise, you buy the bit.
Right.
And so I guess that's a good example of that as well. How involved is this? Something they did throughout their career? They use it as a double thing. They entertain, but they also wanted to save souls.
Yeah. So the whole purpose of the tour that we're going on, this national or world tour that we're going on, is that we're going to each of these towns and cleansing the souls of everyone in the town who comes to see the concert. So the soul censor starts with the number of people that are at the concert, and that number represents the number of people that have sin in their hearts. And so as we perform, that number goes down, and we're cleansing them through our sweet pop music.
Interesting.
It is an interesting concept. I had never read the show or heard the show before I came in and did this, and I thought it was a really great use of a technical aspect to drive the show forward, as opposed to having it just be necessarily character driven. It actually sometimes comes off the back of this prop.
Sure. Yeah, that would be very interesting to see everyone's very, and how the members of the band change, perhaps.
Right.
I know this is all part of the plot,
right.
You can't say.
Right.
But I assume that there's going to be evolving in thought. As things go along.
There's definitely, each character goes through their own kind of personal growth period, and there's things that happen that really shape each character's outlook on, you know, where they have been versus where they are now at the end of the tour.
Absolutely.
So,
tell me about some of the other performers in the show and the characters they play, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have Jeremy Walterman, who's playing Luke, the bad boy, and Jeremy has been in all of the shows I've directed this year. He has auditioned, and he has been perfect for all three. Jeremy does a great job engaging that audience. Whenever Luke is talking, you're going to be watching, and he is. They all have really great comedic moments, but some of his are, you know, the dumb guy moments that you laugh the most at. Most of the time. Zane Champy is playing Abraham, and he's actually a senior at Blue Valley West. And he does a great job being, as Scott said earlier, the glue that holds the boy band together. Zane's kind of the glue that holds the cast together as well, just keeping them on track and everything like that. And Zane's voice comes out of nowhere. You just don't expect his ridiculously smooth, buttery voice that just runs like a pro, and he is still in high school. He's going to have a really great career, and I'm glad that we got to have him. Delano Mendoza plays Juan, the Latin lover, and he was in Schoolhouse Rock with me last year, and he just commands every time he's on stage, and you fall so in love with his character, and he has a very pivotal moment in the show that audience members have just been welling up and some tears flowing, and it's such an unexpected thing because it's just fun, bright lights, bright, loud music, and then out of nowhere, it just hits your heart, and the audiences just completely fall in love with him every night. And then Gabe Lashley, who's playing Mark, does a really great job. I can't say too much about Mark's character, but he's
very colorful.
He is very colorful, and he has some great one-liners that shouldn't be one-liners, but you're going to laugh at them no matter what. Right. And that's bringing in that satire of the show. That's bringing in the stereotypes of them, but never actually mentioning the stereotype.
Sure. I'm sure it's like anything else. There's a public side to these gentlemen. There's a private side to these gentlemen.
That's right.
Often very different from what you appear on stage. It's like that with real performers. It would be, and they are real performers right. within the context of the show. Of course, yeah. Speaking with the director and one of the featured players in the show, Altar Boys, spelled with a Z, Altar Boys, the musical going on at the Olathe Civic Theater Association, will run through. I have this written down here. Run through September the 11th. The number to call for more information would be 913, because it's on the Kansas side, 913-782-2990, and the website is olathetheater.org. The Olathe Civic Theater is located at 500 East Lula in Olathe, Kansas, also known as the Buddy Rogers Theater. At least it was. Is it still called the Buddy Rogers Theater?
Yep, still the Buddy Rogers Theater.
They still have the pictures of Buddy Rogers.
They do, and they have a whole display for him out front, some of his boots and pictures of him, and then there's a big painting inside the theater that he signed that he loves Olathe. And it's a really cool space, and it's perfect for this show because the show's supposed to be done in a church setting, and it used to be a church. So
yeah, Buddy Rogers, it's named after him because he's an Olathe native. He was in the first movie to win an Academy Award, Wings, and was married for a time to Mary Pickford.
Yeah.
So he's famous for all those reasons, and he has a theater. When he came, I wasn't there. I talked to some of the people that were there, and maybe you weren't either, but he's talked about how honored he was that a community theater would be named after him, at least the building.
Yeah, I wasn't there. I've just recently been into the Okta community, but they're very proud of him, and I think that he probably is really proud of them as well. They put on great shows. They do an amazing job, and I just got lucky this year that they let me direct one.
Sure. But that's where it is. It's at 500 East Lulo. It's just south of the main drag. What is that main drag called?
Santa Fe Road.
Yeah,
which is 135th.
Yeah, so Lula would be just a block or two south.
Two blocks south,
of there. And you can get this information, of course, on their website, olathetheater.org. And the number again, 913-782-2990. We're speaking with Guy Gardner, the director and choreographer, and Scott Salem, who plays the role of Matthew. It's a musical. So do you have a musical director?
I do. James Levy, who this is our eighth project now that we've worked on together, is our music director. And the rest of my staff is pretty much the same that I've used for a few years now. I've got James doing music, and he's done a great job. You know, James is an amazing vocalist, and it's not very often that he gets to put together five male voices. Mm-hmm. And I think that because he is a male voice, that's what he likes to hear the most. So he had a great time putting these five, all five of them are amazing, amazing vocalist. So when they're singing together, it's even better. He had a great time putting them together and helping our rocking band. We've got a 5-piece band, 2 keyboards, drums, guitar, and bass that are on stage playing the whole time, really like a rock concert. Rebecca Greed, my stage manager, who keeps everything together. I could not do anything without her, even probably get to rehearsal on time. Patrick Inlow did our scenic design, lighting design, and media design. It is one of the best designs I've ever seen. He's
incredible.
He went way above and beyond, and Okta audiences have just walked into the theater and been like, it has never looked like this before, and I don't know the next time it will, because it's not a show like this, you know. Most plays and musicals have interior locations. You can't just build an awesome concert set. So he did an awesome job with that. And then Phil Cazilla is our sound guy, who's brought in giant speakers and microphones, so it really is a concert. And Fran Capono Cazilla, Phil's wife, who's done my costumes for years and years, have made them all look straight up 90s boy band. The second they walk on stage, you know exactly who they are, even if you just see a picture of them online. So I am very honored and lucky to have the people that I work with follow me from show to show. And we've had a very busy year with Legally Blonde at the Barn, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat at the Park, and Altar Boys now. So I thank them very much for giving me 3 amazing shows. And now we're all going to have a great time taking a nap.
Sounds like you're more comfortable working with a certain core group of people.
Yeah, and there are so many great people to work with in this town, and the group of us have just become like a sitcom, and we just work together. You know, you don't know why the 6 friends work. They just do. And we have been very lucky to put on shows that have great scripts, that are written really well, that have amazing music, and I think that we choose wisely, and then we put our heart and soul into them. So, and hopefully audiences see that.
Musicals have numbers. Tell us about some of the numbers. Do you have any that you sing yourself, or are they all collectively sung?
Well, I mean, really every song is a collective song. I mean, at least when there are solo numbers, you know, all the boys are singing backup, as you do in a 90s boy band. One of the songs that I have a solo, I mean, basically soloing the whole song, is called Something About You. Every night we host a Meet the Altar Boys contest, and I kind of get to choose who gets to meet the Altar Boys every night for that song, and it's very fun.
Is this groupie style? It's a Christian band.
Yeah.
But is it groupie style, Meet the Altar Boys? A backstage pass kind of thing?
Not quite.
Not quite. Okay.
Not quite.
Not quite.
No, go ahead.
But they do get to come up on stage and hang out with the band for a song.
Just
as
good.
And
they got to sing with the Altar Boys.
Right, yeah. Right, exactly. Otherwise, I mean, there are so many amazing numbers in this show. It's really hard to single any one song out. The opening number is probably one of my favorite numbers in the whole show, just to introduce all of us as our boy band, and it really helps get the audience to understand that, okay, we did come here for a concert, you know. I think people still walk in and aren't really sure what to expect when they walk into the theater and they say, okay, it looks, you know, like a concert stage and that's cool, but it's going to be a musical. You know what I mean? They expect the traditional, and then when the lights flash and we start singing
and
dancing.
Yeah, when that fourth note hits, I'm telling you, the fourth note of the show,
yeah,
you know what to expect. And it is just like, you're there and you hear the first note, the second note, the third note. Then the fourth one hits, and all of a sudden, all the receptors in your eyes have been turned on, because the lights are going insane and the band is playing this ridiculous music. And then the boys come out in the most overdramatic style of all time through the audience and stand in this overdramatic pose. You know, you might say that I am a little overdramatic in my dress.
Never.
Which I'm sure no one listening would ever agree with. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. So, but yeah, he said, we are the Altar Boys. There's a great number called Church Rules, which is one of my
rules,
favorite. Yeah. And that's Church Rules with a Z.
With a Z.
And that's going to go through all of the rules that you go through in church. When do you stand up? When do you kneel? When do you sit down? When do you stand up again? When do you kneel again? When do you sit down again? When do you kneel again? When do you stand up again?
How does the collection plate work?
Yeah.
Pass the plate, yeah.
Exactly.
But so. Some churches pass the plate more than once.
Exactly.
I won't mention any names. I have seen plates pass four times in one service.
I have as well. Now, when you come to our show, we're not going to ask you for money, but if you want to donate to them, I'm pretty sure that Okta is a 501c3.
If one itemizes, that is true.
There you go.
So the show will run through the 11th.
Mm-hmm.
So you've already had one weekend under your belt.
Yes.
You have but two more weekends under your belt. How's the audience been receptive to, I guess I asked that right off the bat,
right.
How have they been receptive to the concert and storyline within the concert?
You know, you get a huge range of people and the way that they react to the show. But overall, I mean, it's been an incredibly positive reaction. We have the people who, from the very beginning, are screaming and yelling in the theater, which we encourage, by the way. It is a concert. Cheer. Make noise. That's not going to throw us off. other theater person, please be as quiet as you possibly can. Yeah. And we don't want that here. I mean, really, cheer for us and clap and
holler. That's a mistake, by the way, to ask that. I was at a concert years ago where John Sebastian said that to the audience. The opening act was Sha-na-na.
All right.
And he was the second act by himself. He had left his group by then. And he said, now, be very quiet and listen to the words of the ballad. Well, Sean and I just finished. There was no we were flying across the stage.
Right.
And he ended up walking off stage.
Wow.
So sometimes that doesn't work. It's better to say just react the way you want.
Yeah, just go out and enjoy yourself. I think the only thing that I've heard from people coming in before they've seen the show is that they're worried that this show is somehow going to make fun of of religion. And because it is, you know, it's a Christian boy band, it's a Catholic boy band, and they're worried that it's going to be kind of a Book of Mormon show that kind of pokes fun at it, and it really doesn't. I mean, the boys are all very strong in their belief. They take it very seriously what they do. There is religious humor, but it does not make fun of religion. And there's a big difference, you know, between the two things.
There is.
Yeah, there is. Absolutely. And, when people come, they're going to have a good time, and I've talked about the lights before, but there's so much that goes into the show. We've got fog, strobe, water effect. I mean, water effects. What kind of show has a water effect? A show where I'm crazy. That's what. All of those things. You're going to come out of your comfort zone a couple times, and it's going to be a good thing. You know, no one has had a bad time. And like he said, it doesn't make fun of everything. When you were a kid, you always felt really awkward doing the Peace Be With You portion of the thing. When you're little, you have to get used to it. So when that comes up, it's not making fun of it. It's reminding you about your youth and how you were there. And like, oh, gosh, I don't want to talk to these strangers behind me in this pew. I don't want to talk. Mom, can I just sit down? Or you're just playing with the pedestal to kneel on, and the whole time you're just like, ka-tunk, 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 the whole time. So.
That was me.
Performances continue. What is it, basically a Thursday through Sunday?
Friday through Sunday. Yeah, so six more. Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Evening performances at what time?
8 o'clock on Fridays and Saturdays, and 2 o'clock on Sundays.
2 o'clock on Sundays. So two more weekends of Altar Boys at the Olathe Civic Theater, at the Buddy Rogers Theater in Olathe, Kansas. The number to call, 913-782-2990 or online at olathetheater.org. It's a concert and a story all wove into one.
Right, you get it all.
Yeah, you get it all.
No crowd surfing, however.
That would be fun.
It would be fun. But Okta is an intimate theater, so I don't know how long we crowd surf, maybe for 5 seconds, and then we'd be back at the theater at that Buddy Rogers painting.
I want to thank my guests for being with me. Guy Gardner, the director, choreographer, is directed at many places around time. First time with Olathe. Let's see how that goes. And Scott Salem, who plays the role of Matthew. This is his first show with Okta, his second show in Kansas City. We look forward to seeing you in many more shows to come.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you,
Jazz Insider Sam Wiseman is next. He will have some great jazz to send your way. Jazz will be from 1 to 3, then the blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that crossing the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.